So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
Let's talk about the markets now with Tom Fortino from the Alpha Wealth Group. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. How are you doing today?
Real good. You should listen to that conversation we're going to have with Thomas Jefferson.
I really, that's very interesting. As you know, John Adams died that day, too. I'm sure you probably talked about that, but they both died on July 4th.
And I believe it was, was it Jefferson's last words were, does Adams still live? Or was it Adams' last words were, does Jefferson still live? But they were competitive that way to the very end. They were friends at the end, but they were competitive,
they were.
Too. I would imagine you'd be more of an Alexander Hamilton kind of guy, though, Tom.
You know, it's tough. I liked them all. They all were, you know what, it was a unique time, and they all had their own unique characteristics, and it was Providence, I think, that brought these people together. So,
yeah, we are the amalgamation of them. And all things considered, at least in principle, that's good. Hey, listen, talk to me a little bit about the markets right now. Steve just reminded us that two of the indices are having banner years.
They are. I mean, if you look at the NASDAQ and the S&P, up 16%, 30%. S&P's up 16, NASDAQ's up 30. And that's great. I mean, how can you be upset about that? The question is, are we kind of over our skis here? You know, if you go back 2 years, the NASDAQ's actually negative over the last 2 years. Really only one index over 2 years is up, and that's the S&P by a few percentage points. That said, again, this is still good news. You can't. We just have to see how the second half goes. And again, I think, right, you look at the PE, the S&P is at 25. I know some people think the valuations are there. I'm not really sure. I don't think that's a big value at 25 PE on the S&P. So there's some headwinds. I would just say that. So we want to be cautious.
Well, you are where you are, and it's better to be up than down. But I hadn't heard it put that way. If we're up as much as we almost ever have been in the last 6 months, over the last 2 years, we're down. I guess I know why. That would include the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But then if you draw the line back a little bit further, Terry Savage did this the other day. She said, wow, we're up again. I don't know if she went back to 2016, but the curve, the graph does slope significantly upward. It just depends on where you draw that line.
That's true. And, you know, I think the takeaway from this, John, is, you know, for those, we just have to stick to what we have, right? We have to have a core portfolio we stick to. I'm all for, you know, nibbling around the edges. You look for opportunities on whatever it might be of your portfolio. And I use that analogy, that phrase before about the, you know, Eugene Fama and the bar of soap. You know, the more you handle it, it's like the market, the more you handle it, the smaller it gets. Imagine those people that went to cash the beginning of this year because they just couldn't take it. And here we are 6 months later. That's the point. I think some of the takeaway here, as the average investor, you really want to stick to design a portfolio that makes sense for what you're trying to do. You maybe make some adjustments here and there. You maybe look for opportunities from stocks that have been beaten up that you say, okay, I'm going to buy some of this at a small percentage of my portfolio. Try to get some additional, you know, growth on the portfolio or add something to it. But we really want to, you just really need to be disciplined. I think that's where a lot of us may fail because we let the emotions take over. And then you see years like this where we're out of the market, right? And so it's disheartening when we see some of those things happen to individuals. But I think that's a lesson to be learned from this.
You know, Tom, you were just talking about the discipline that we should have and how it would have paid off in the first 6 months of this year. You would have risen with the tide, say, if you were in an index fund and have done very well. But imagine the lure of 5% guaranteed in these conservative products. What do you say to people that are trying to think, should I continue to fund my 401k with a mutual fund, or should I put it in the bank, you know?
Well, we have to be very careful about confusing fixed with growth. I think it's terrific. We're kind of getting to what's called normal with interest rates, right? And that's a good thing. It also reduces interest rate risk in your portfolio, as we saw last year where the interest rates went up, right? So that's a great thing. But let's not confuse fixed with growth. again, if you're saying I'm going to go into fixed, okay, that's great. And now you're getting a good rate. That's great too. But the next question is, okay, now when do you go back in the market to get growth? No one's going to tap you on the shoulder. And so we can't time the market. Nobody can. So again, this is where you have to be very careful. If you say I'm going to overweight a little more into the fixed than normal, instead of being 50-50, I may be 40-60 or whatever it may be. That's fine. But you just really, again, getting back to that disciplined approach. Let's not confuse growth with fixed. And so I think, you know, when we take a look historically, and we just talked about that, John, about we go back a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, over time, you know, growth is going to perform much more than it's going to be much higher, big difference. And so especially with longer life expectancies, with inflation, it just makes sense to have growth as part of our portfolio.
Yeah, I get that. Well, and we've also wondered in the past, if the market is down, do you expect it will do better than, say, those fixed rate products? If you say, well, I think in the long run, I'll get more than 5%, mm-hmm. better you invest now when the market's a little down. Although I wouldn't describe it as down right now, would you?
Well, it's all relative, right, as to what point. No, I wouldn't say it's down. A lot of times, you know, what you can look at, and it depends on what you're, you know, do you do fundamental analysis or do you technical analysis? But I just mentioned right now, and you can look at the forward PE, but you say it's just like any type of asset you're going to buy, if it's whether it's real estate, whether it's a stock or the stock market itself, is there value? And so when you say the current PE is 25, well, that's a fairly high PE. Right, relative to where we want. It's 16, 17, 15. You know, now we're saying there's some value there. Again, it really depends on how you're assessing and where you say there's value in the market. So right now, is the market a little overvalued? There's a pretty good argument that it is. And so is there going to be correction? Some say there will be. And so that's really how you want to assess what is the value of the market as it stands today, not just maybe has it done over the 6 months and so on. And so, you know, that's kind of where we're at and how you want to look at it. But again, it's really about just staying the course, keeping having the right portfolio and then sticking with it.
Since it's a relatively small number of stocks that are lifting the S&P or the NASDAQ, I wonder if there's some opportunities inside those indices with some of the mm-hmm. other stocks. And if so, is there mm-hmm. a category that you like right now, Tom? Is there an area where you think it is going to do better?
You know, again, that's a tough one. You know, I hate to come back to this. We have to be careful. You know, it's the old, instead of trying to find the needle in the haystack, buy the haystack, right? John Bogle said that. So, for example, if you're looking at energy, you can take a look at some of the sectors that have been down. Energy has been one sector that hasn't done so well. So you want to buy. That's the beauty of the ETFs, the exchange-traded funds.
Yeah, yeah.
You can look. Yeah, you can look at certain sectors or certain areas and say, look, I'm not going, you know, home builders, for example, that sector is up, you know, over 20-30%, which is interesting in and of itself. But or if you want to buy energy, XLE, that's an ETF. There's others you can buy. But I think that's an opportunity, again, where we nibble on the periphery, or you want to look at individual stocks that you think there's value. You can buy those, too.
I would imagine the home building industry is going to be a pretty safe bet over the next how many years? I mean, there's just so much pent-up demand. We have a lack of inventory.
That is absolutely, and that's why you're seeing it. I think some people would say, wow, when you look at existing home sales being down, you look at mortgage rates going up. The last place, I'm just saying maybe some people feel this way, the last one thing I want to do is I want to buy KB Lennar or, you know, Pulte or just, again, buy the home builders as an exchange-traded fund. But those, to your point, the inventories are incredibly low. I think it's maybe a little over 2 months. But we're seeing these opportunities because there's people that are not moving because they're in low mortgage rates. Inventories are low. We have millennials entering the market where they're in those buying years. So there may be some opportunities there, too.
Last question about the Fed. Every expert I have on seems to have a different opinion about what they should do, or for that matter, are we going to feel a recession in the next 12 months? In general, what do you say about those two things?
Well, As far as I think there are some, as I said, some concerns with the levels of debt out there, but the credit card debt close to $1 trillion, overall consumer debt, $17 trillion. You know, when is it going to break? And we just saw with student loans and the moratorium. We'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting. It's real estate and the commercial real estate. So I think the Fed has taken the pause like they should have, because you got to let some of these things seep in.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I think it's going to be an interesting second half of the year.
Let me interrupt you, Tom. Quick answer to this. Since the money that was either going into savings or more likely was actually going into retail is now going to have to go to service student debt, do you think that this ruling is going to be felt in the markets or in the economy?
Well, we're seeing retail sales have not really, relative to inflation, really have been flat. I think they looked at about $6 to $8 billion of, the monies that will come out of retail sales potentially from this. So it could have an impact. I think retail sales are under pressure anyway, and this can just kind of add a little more to it. It won't be a massive hit to it, but I think it could impact it, yes.
Tom Fortino from the Alpha Wealth Group will talk about stuff like this and more. It's about your personal finances, and that'll be with Elise Glink Sunday morning at 7. Nice to talk to you, Tom. Thanks for your help today.
Nice to you, too. Have a great weekend.
You do, too. Happy 4th. Here's Joe Scarpelli, Executive Vice President of FH Passion. This is a business that has been in the construction and contracting business for over 100 years, I read. Joe, how are you today?
Good, John. How are you? Thank you for having me on the show here today.
Tell me about the kind of work you guys do.
So, John, we're a general contractor, construction manager. We're headquartered here in Chicago. We do a lot of public infrastructure work. You'll see us at the airport, on the roads, schools, transportation, mostly any public sector type projects here in the Chicagoland area and across the country.
Give me a typical job you're working on right now.
So right now we're very involved with the tollway. You'll see us out there on the 294 widening. That's one of our projects going on right now. We're at Jackson Park. We're doing the reconfiguration for the Obama Presidential Center down there. So it's just a couple of projects.
Yeah, I've heard of those. It must be fun to get the bid on those. I mean, maybe a nightmare. It's a lot of work, a lot of planning. But, what a feather in your cap to be involved in something like that.
Right. Yeah, it's more of a nightmare sometimes on bid day.
Well, better you figure it out than me. Maybe you're going to get some help, too. You've got a program to get young people into the trades, right?
Exactly. So we have we started about 9 years ago. We were approached by the city of Chicago to partner with Chicago Public Schools. They asked several companies to do this. And we were teamed up with Westinghouse Academy on the west side of Chicago, and we created this program called Passion Scholars. And so each year we take on 6 new students from Westinghouse to get them exposed to STEM. And our business being construction, we try to expose them to the built environment, architecture, construction, engineering is what our plan is. So every summer we have an activity for the students, always a freshman class, sophomore, and junior class. And the seniors, when they left, we would give them a giveaway bag with a lot of trinkets and things that they take away to college, a gift card and things like that. But what we found is that the students, we're losing contact with them. And we also have a huge program. We have a college internship program where we hire college students throughout the country. We have over 60 interns in our program throughout the country right now. And what our goal is really to get the Passion Scholars to be interns and eventually, come to work for us in our business. And what we were finding is we were losing the students. So this year we created a program called the Passion Bridge Program. And what that is, it's a bridge between high school, the graduating seniors, and the ones that are going to college. So this year we have 6 students. This is our first year for it. They're Westinghouse students. 4 of them are Passion Scholars. 2 are also our Westinghouse students. The students had to apply for the position, submit a resume, interview. We offered them a job. They accepted it, and now they're here working. It's an 8-week internship. They're going to work 20, 30 hours a week. It's paid, and it's going to go on their resume, and they're going to get exposed to the construction industry and what we do and a real-life working experience being in business.
I saw that you described it as not a spectator sport. What are the young people going to – what will they physically be doing?
So we put them right into our internship program. So with the college interns and with the Passion Scholars, they're working with mentors, they're on job sites, they're here in the office, and they're given assignments that any other intern would have on a, on a project. Project controls, documentation, doing updates, actually walking the sites, being out in the field. So just getting exposed to our business and our industry.
Sounds like, though, that's the general contractor or maybe a supervisor. Yeah. Are you involved in the skilled trades? Is that part of your program, too?
So the Passion Scholars is not for that. So it's strictly for students that are going on to college in the STEM, you know, in the engineering environment is what we're looking for as part of the Passion Scholar program.
Got it.
We have other programs for the trades themselves.
Is the hope, this sounds smart. It's, first of all, a great way to give to the community. It's also a great way to recruit kids if you need an engineer when they graduate, right?
Exactly. What we're seeing, you know, in our business, there's a lot of work going on, and we're recognizing there's a lot of people like me that are getting up there in their age and their careers, and we really need to find replacements for them. So, you know, we started going, you know, developing our internship program. Like I said, we have over 60 interns. And this is really going the next step in going into the high schools and identifying students and try to get them interested in the construction industry as really as a, you know, it's a career.
Are kids of color, are women, are girls, are high school age women?
All the above, yes. The Westinghouse Scholars are, you know, the minority and women. We have, for our Passion Bridge program, there are two young ladies in the program right now and four young men.
I just think that sounds so great. I wonder if they appreciate what an opportunity this is. That sounds fantastic.
So the feedback so far has been great. You know, so they've been, you know, obviously been given some real work assignments, and you know, we had them on board for about 2 weeks now, and so far the very positive impact from the students.
I want to change the subject for just a minute. You said that it can be very difficult to manage some of these projects like the tollway or Jackson Park where the Obama, it's not the library, what is it called? The Obama Library.
Presidential Center.
Yeah, yeah. What are the complications? What makes a job like that difficult? Is it just traffic management or talk to me a little bit about that.
So the biggest thing in construction is really you're managing people and subcontractors. A lot of people management, whether you're employed, you have self-employed trades, logistics in terms of getting material to the job site. Just think about all the bits and pieces that go into building a construction project, right? Someone's got to make sure that all that stuff gets there on time and gets in the right place. So a lot of logistics, a lot of people management, goes into our business, and of course the financial end. You're managing a business.
You know, I've wondered that a lot. I a lot of times come into work off of Wilson down to Lakeshore Drive, and on the north side of Wilson, just before the drive, a high rise of some sort is going up, and I've watched that thing go up from the ground up, and and it's interesting how it seems to be like clockwork. Now there's a cement truck. Now there's lumber. And the other thing that amazes me is everybody seems to know where to put the board and, you know, at what angle to raise it and then nail it in. And I don't know how they know how to do what they're doing. I'm just amazed by that.
Yeah. There's a lot of skilled work that they go into it, and obviously a lot of planning coordination. It starts with the design, and then the contractor has to, you know, obviously go out there and build that, put those plans in place.
Is that thing at Jackson Park going pretty well?
It's going good. Yes. Yeah.
It's amazing the breadth of that too. I mean, that's a big project.
Yes. Yes. Several streets. We got a big cut over this weekend happening, sort of shutting down one of the streets. So, yeah, it's an ongoing thing.
Well, let's get that next generation of engineers, of STEM students interested in this kind of work. I think the more we talk about education and employment these days, the more we realize we need to push more and more young people into the area that you live in.
Right, right.
How do people sign up for it, Joe?
So, you know, we recruit a lot out of college in terms of, you know, hiring our engineers, right? We go to the colleges. We recruit at over 35 colleges across the country, and we get people that are interested in construction, civil engineering, construction management. Those are the college careers that we look for mostly, and a lot of our hires come out of our internship program. Like I said, we have over 60 interns. We probably graduate about 20 or 25 a year, and about 80% of those students come on board to work for us after graduation.
Well, it just sounds like a great program, Joe. I'm glad that you're on with us. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing with these young people this summer. Joe Scarpelli is the Executive Vice President of FH Passion, P-A-S-C-H-E-N, Passion. You can find out more at fhpassion.com. Joe, have a great summer, a great weekend. Thanks for visiting with us.
John, thank you very much.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's more business news with Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Traveling this weekend, AAA says nearly 3 million Illinoisans will make at least one trip of 50 miles or more between now and July 4th. That's 120,000 more travelers than last year, which set a record high. If you're driving, gas prices nationally are unchanged from last week. Gas Buddy says average gas prices in Chicago are down 8.5 cents, but nearly 5 cents a gallon more than a month ago. And if you're cooking out this 4th, food will be more affordable than last year. The American Farm Bureau Federation says on average you'll pay less than $68 for a party of 10, down 3% from last year. Keep in mind, though, the 1% grocery tax in Illinois goes back into effect tomorrow, having been suspended due to high inflation. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Business of Food Time, here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and it's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and Jim Fizzell, how are you doing with that Canadian smoke? Is it bothering you?
Nah, we haven't noticed it at all. You know, when I grew up, we had coal-fired furnaces. Everybody had them. All winter, you had smoke. In the spring, we did clean up. People burned the stuff that was from over the winter. In the fall, we had leaves that fell. Everybody burned the leaves. Sometimes even the fields where they had crops out there that had dried up and they wanted to get rid of all the stuff, they'd burn them off. We always had smoke.
Ah, the good old days.
And we still survive. We're still going.
Well, that Canadian smoke is annoying and bothersome and dangerous for some people.
Yes.
But that isn't why Jim is here. Sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Mr. Fizz.
Time to go on vacation, Steve. You know, a lot of us, now that school's out, you know, I went to the Chicago schools, and we were always the last school district out in the summer, and by the time we got out, it was nearly 4th of July. Vacation time. We always went on to camp at that time and on vacation. While you're gone, you need to think about what to do about your plantings. First of all, with your house plants, if you're going to be gone a week, just soak them thoroughly and set them in a cool, shaded part of the house. Maybe in one place where they're easy to get to. If you're going to be gone 2 weeks or so, water the plants thoroughly. Set them in a large pan or a bathtub with shallow water in them. And use a wick watering system if you have one or if you can get one. That's where you put water in a container and you put a wick into each pot, and that works very well.
Yeah, you know, we tried your bathtub trick last summer, and it worked great.
Perfect. If you're going to be gone more than 2 weeks, get somebody to come in and do the watering. And you might want to set up grow lights for that, because if they're in a dark place, the plants will begin to deteriorate if you put them all in the same place with the shades shut.
Mr. Fizz, gardening guru Jim Fizzell, and he'll be back on Monday with more tips about what to do when you go on vacation. From the farm to your belly, it is the final day of June Dairy Month. You know what to do. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Joel Klum, who is the COO of a business called Worldwide Express, which you and I haven't had to think about before. But this weekend, you're going to be glad they exist. Joel, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Thanks for having me, John. I'm happy to be here. I'm doing very well. How about yourself?
Pretty good. You're the NASCAR logistics guy. So what do you do?
Apparently, right? This weekend, it's such a huge event for Chicago and NASCAR in general. So, you know, we're very proud to be the official logistics partner of NASCAR. And with that, and we'll talk a lot about the race this weekend, but, you know, this race in particular, like we're organizing a ton of the logistics and the things that are coming into the city, and then the things that we'll be removing, you know, and getting out of the city pretty quickly, you know, like 10,000 tons of concrete barriers, 10,000 tires that are coming in. So we're organizing a lot of the logistics to make sure that the race goes smoothly.
I saw that. You're not exaggerating, are you? You've got to pick up 10 full trailers of Goodyear tires from Oklahoma and then deliver them to Chicago, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's amazing. And Chicago's such an awesome city because we do these types of grand events, right? But you don't think about all the things that go in that to make all these things possible, like a road race in a city like Chicago. I mean, it's not, you know, we've done them in other cities, obviously, but it's such a logistical feat in order to make something like that happen and do it in a way that's as least disruptive as possible for local people. So there's a lot of moving parts that make something like that happen.
What's a unique challenge about setting up the NASCAR track in Chicago?
I mean, we all know Chicago, right? So it's one of the biggest cities in the country, and we're doing it in the heart of the city, right? You're not doing it out in like Joliet or something like that where you're kind of far away from all the thoroughfares. But there's, you know, when you're working with the city, there's all sorts of things that go into making sure that you're doing it very precisely, you're staging everything properly, and then you can do it, you know, as fast and, you know, sort of in a NASCAR, you know, sort of efficient way as possible. And so, you know, it's just, I think like the coordination on those things is really that's the challenge, right? Because everything, it's kind of like a NASCAR race, right? Like when you see like the pit crew, everybody's working together. They're like flipping off tires. They're adding gas. I mean, all those things that goes into it, you need everything to work in concert and harmony. And if you have one piece that doesn't work, it impacts something else. And so you got to be thinking about three steps ahead on everything because you're always preparing for, well, what if this thing's at, what if this happens? What if that truck doesn't show up? What if they miss their appointment here? So there's always a lot of things you got to keep in mind as you're coordinating something of this scale.
How's it going, Joel? Are you guys on schedule? Will you be ready?
Yeah, we feel really good. It's the city of Chicago is so great for something like this because everything, I think people are pretty excited about what it means for the city, and we're bringing in 100,000 people that will probably be, you know, they're attending and watching the race and all the money that's pouring into the local economy. So, you know, we feel pretty confident that everything's going to go very smoothly this weekend, and then we'll tear it down and get everything shipped out.
Can you just talk briefly about fan safety? I know that tires sometimes fly off of cars,
yep.
And I've watched those barriers go up. Just tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's that's a great point, John, because, you know, one of the things, especially when you're doing this at a location that's not an established track, right? You know, I talked about Joliet and some of these motor speedways across the country. They're designed specifically for that. The folks at NASCAR take very seriously spectator safety and all safety and just making sure that you have appropriate fencing, making sure that you've got the appropriate barriers. And, you know, it's something that, you know, you're bringing all these people together. You want everyone to have a really fun time, but at the same time, you want everyone to be really safe. And so that's something that, you know, the people at NASCAR, you know, think a lot about and have designed systems for. So we make sure that all spectators can enjoy themselves and know that they're in a good spot and that their safety is going to be, taken really seriously. So it's a big part of making sure that this goes well.
Joel, I'm out of time. I'm sure we'll talk again at some point, if nothing else, next year and the year after that. But it's been fascinating to watch you guys do your thing, man. Thanks for putting this thing together.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it, John.
Joel Klum, you bet, is the COO of Worldwide Express.